My name is Roger Harms, for those of you who are new to this course. We're discussing human embryology in five nights, going from fertilization of the ovum through the development of the embryo and fetus in utero. And by Friday, we will have the birth of a brand new baby. Not live and in color, unfortunately. But on slides, at least. Every night, what we've been doing is talking about a few of the key words that we are going to discuss during the lecture, so that when they come by again, they won't be completely foreign to you. Tonight, we've got a shorter list. Last night was the tough one. Tonight, we're going to talk about the development of the embryo into the fetus, okay? By convention, the developing child in utero, up until the time that all organ systems have been formed, is known as an embryo. And this occurs in the first 8 weeks after conception. So automatically, on the first day of the ninth week, the embryo becomes a fetus, just by convention. Okay. But with this development, there's going to be a lot of folding and differentiating, which we talked about several times from previous nights. I should probably review that one. Differentiation is just the more making a given cell line more sophisticated, more capable to do whatever its special job is. We'll be doing a lot of that tonight. But the new words for tonight are cranial, caudal, and lateral. Cranial. An alternate will be rostral. I'll try to use cranial. Cranial means toward the head end. Okay, makes sense. Toward the cranium. Caudal. Caudal is a Latin word referring to tails. So anything toward the back end is caudal. And toward the sides is lateral. You can have a left lateral or a right lateral. So that's easy enough. Caudal, cranial, and lateral. Then from last night, once again, the germ cell layers we'll be working with a lot, the ectoderm, mesoderm, and endoderm, those three divisions of the building blocks of the embryo from which all our organs are formed. And we'll be talking a little more in specifics. Ecto means outside, generally speaking, not all cases. The ectoderm is going to be outside coverings, with the exception of the brain and the nervous system, which is also in the ectoderm. Mesoderm, you can sort of think of in the middle, and it ends up in the middle. That's where your muscles and connective tissues are. And endoderm is that which ends up deep in the middle. And that would be like the gastrointestinal tract, the respiratory tract, and things like that. Like I said, we'll get into it further. But these are the three main divisions of tissue that eventually evolve into all the organ systems in the body. The branchial arches are the residuals of gills. Gill arches are formed in, of course, amphibians and fishes, and these are very similar to the gill arches that we see in those lower creatures. They develop early. Those are one of the first things we'll be talking about. End up being head and neck structures. Okay, so the branchial arches are four, five structures which come from the side of the upper part, the cranial end of the embryo, and extend across the front until they meet like fingers in the middle. We'll be talking more about that. Each one then forms an arch, see, across with a space in between. Those are the branchial arches. The cloaca is, some of you have had some biology, I'm sure know what cloacas are. The early far end, caudal end of the gastrointestinal tract, urinary tract, and reproductive tract, which is initially all one depression in the outside of the embryo. And the last word, of course, is polymath for the day, and we're hoping that this lecture will not require a polymath to understand, okay? All right. A little bit of review. Once again, our text is the first chapter of the Gospel according to St. John. I think it warrants reading again, I guess. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through Him all things came to be. Not one thing had its being but through Him. All that came to be had life in Him, and that life was the light of men, a light that shines in the dark, a light that darkness could not overpower. So we started with the sperm, developed in the millions. We went on to the development of the ovum from the, which was first its development within the ovary in the little nest of cells called the follicle, and then with ovulation, the escape from the ovary picked up by the fingers of the fallopian tube, and fertilization occurring in the distal end of the fallopian tube in the ampullary area. And then by 30 hours we have a complete division into two cells. Then we have four cells, 16 cells, the morula stage, the mulberry stage, where we look like we have a mass of just cellular material, and that's by the third day after fertilization. The formation of the blastocyst, which we talked about before, and implantation. Then, as we talked about last night, with implantation, we have the formation of the beginnings of the placenta, the trophoblast, which invades into the wall of the uterus, invades all the way into the wall of the uterus so that it is completely covered by uterine lining. The developing blastocyst and its accompanying trophoblast, which will be the placenta, is completely buried in the wall of the uterus. This is by 12 days, and by 17 days, you can see a pregnancy on an ultrasound. This is the bladder in front, the uterus, and the circle of water, which is the amniotic fluid, and a pregnancy can be detected. At 10 to 12 days after fertilization, you can detect the hormone HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin, in the blood, and we know that that is a positive pregnancy test. Then last night we talked about how three layers were developed, the ectoderm, the mesoderm, and the endoderm in blue, red, and yellow, and a little ditch forms in the ectoderm, which eventually becomes a tube-like structure, which will be the beginnings of the brain and the spinal cord. So that brings us up to tonight. This is a busy slide, but it's not as bad as it looks if we take it apart. The next thing we need to talk about is how the embryo changes from a flat, sort of teardrop-shaped structure into a tubular structure, and eventually into a more familiar looking structure like here. We're starting out nearly flat, but as we talked about last night, the development of these bumps of mesodermal tissue, the somites, in the central portion, and with the development of those somites, the embryo starts to fold, okay? It folds in two directions. First, from head to tail, it goes from a flat form to a C-shaped form. And then from the lateral sides, it goes from a flat form around until it's an oval form. Okay? So we're seeing this from two directions, one from cranial to caudal, that's this picture, and one from lateral to lateral, or transverse section, and that's this picture. Okay, let's look at this a little more slowly. By the end of the third week, this is still back in last night, the brain begins to develop at the most cranial end of the embryo. Rapid growth of the brain is what starts to cause this folding. The brain and the spinal cord are the fastest things to grow here at the beginning. Its growth extends beyond that primitive heart we talked about yesterday that was at the front end of the embryo and starts to fold it under. See here, the heart is beginning to get folded under as both the tail end and the head end of the embryo start to fold down. And this folding action forces the heart down into a lower region on the lower surface of the embryo. As this occurs, remember the amniotic sac was over above this embryo, and that enlarges and enlarges and enlarges and pushes more and more pressure on the yolk sac so that it gets narrower and narrower here in the middle. Eventually this becomes very narrow and is therefore the key onlaga, the primitive form of that important structure, the belly button. Okay? That's what we're getting around to there. As this head end folds around the corner, a little bit of the yolk sac gets incorporated deep inside the embryo. And that, along with this mesodermal layer, is going to form the beginning of the gut, the mouth, the oropharynx, and also the respiratory tract. So a little bit of the yolk sac gets incorporated in for this construction of that. Then in the tail, the same thing happens. A little bit of the yolk sac gets captured in there, and that will be the distal, the rectal part of the gastrointestinal tract. And just on the outside surface here is a little thin plate. We talked the other night about the prochordal plate at the front end. There's a similar plate in the back end that is not growing as fast. And that is the area where the cloaca will form that we talked about a few minutes ago. Okay, so that we have a foregut forming and a hindgut forming as parts of the yolk sac. Now, we talked about the three germ layers. Let me just go through briefly again. The ectoderm is this top layer, then a mesoderm in the middle. The endoderm is on the lower level at this point. The ectoderm is forming the central nervous system, all the nerves in the body, the peripheral nervous system. Sensory layers of the ear and the eye and the nose, skin, hair, and nails. Breasts, enamel of the teeth, and pituitary gland all come from that ectodermal layer. The mesoderm, the part in the middle, although quite thin shown in these pictures, becomes very prominent and produces all the cartilage, bone, and connective tissues, the muscles, blood vessels, kidneys, the gonads, spleen, and adrenal gland. And then the endoderm, that inner layer, along with the yolk sac, forms all the gastrointestinal respiratory tracts and all the glands that are associated with it, such as the pancreas, the liver, gallbladder. That's not a gland, but all comes from the same area. Okay. Now, another fold that's going on is the lateral folds. And with the formation of this lateral folding, the yolk sac gets the squeeze from the other direction. And you'll recall that there was just a tiny little space here that was what was called the coelom, which is the beginnings of the body cavities. And as the folding goes on, that coelomic area increases and increases and increases in size until at this picture, this whole area here is space, and the sidewalls of the embryo have come down and come together eventually, and at this bottom slide, the only thing that's left of the yolk sac is this little circle in the middle, and that is one tubular piece of intestine. Now, we'll get back to that in future slides. Okay. So the change has happened. Instead of a flat teardrop-shaped thing, we have a tubular-shaped thing. And in the center portion, that neural tube that we talked about last night has closed completely. But at the front end and at the rear end, it remains open. And remember last night we talked about some very severe congenital abnormalities can happen if those last portions to close don't close. Okay, we're talking about 22 days, 23 days. See if I can get that focused just a little bit. There we go. Doesn't want to stay that way. But by 24 days, just the last portion of the neural tube at the front is closing. So we're only talking about 3 weeks and 2 days or so of a pregnancy by the time that's closed. And if anything abnormal is going to happen chemically or otherwise to cause those neural tubes not to close, it's going to happen that early in the pregnancy when many people would not even know they're pregnant. Okay. Now, we have the folding of the embryo's body into this C-shaped routine. The heart has come down into more or less what will be a chest position. And then we have the formation of the branchial arches that I talked about right here in sort of the neck region. At the same time, the very beginnings of an eye, the lens placode it is called, which will eventually be the lens of the eye, has formed a little dot on the outside surface. Notice how significant the embryo's tail is at this point. Also, remember we talked about the somites, those little segments of mesodermal tissue that are eventually going to form muscles, and their nerve supply is going to carry on right on through adulthood. You see how prominent they have become. You can definitely sort of picture the earthworm variety right along the backside here as all those segments have formed. Okay. So this is a picture depicting the fourth week of pregnancy. Okay, this is about when the standard urinary pregnancy test, at the end of this week, the standard urinary pregnancy test would be positive. The neural tube closes, it's a C-shaped, the branchial arches form, and we're just beginning to get a little bud of the arm. Nothing much in terms of legs yet, but we get a little bud of outgrowth that will eventually be the arm. Okay. Unfortunately, it could stand to be a little bit darker in here for this picture, but this is the genuine article, a four-week embryo. You can see the collection of blood in the heart region right there, and the arm bud here. If somebody could turn off the lights briefly, I think this might be worth it. And you can see the segments here, which are the somites along the back. In addition, you begin to see those branchial arches, 1, 2, 3 of them, in the region of the neck, and a pretty prominent tail. Okay. I think probably it's light enough here and you could just leave them off for the moment. Okay. Now don't anybody go to sleep. Okay. Now moving, I keep going backwards here. Moving on, we have a progression now into the fifth week of development and on into the sixth. And we're having some pretty rapid changes now. The branchial arches have formed. There gets to be sort of a flattened out area on that arm bud, paddle shaped as it's called, that is going to eventually be a hand, the lower limb bud is forming, and the tail is getting a little bit shorter. This is at the beginning, 32 days, so we're just into the fifth week, and as you can see, the heart is a very prominent portion of the external surface of the embryo at all of these stages. The heart is sticking right out, okay? The retina has attained a pigment, and you could, if you did visualize an embryo at this stage, the eye would be obvious because of this pigmented retina. The somites are becoming a little less prominent, those segments, and by the end of the 41st day, we're almost to 6 weeks, you can begin to see the divisions in that hand, which are going to be fingers eventually. That has just started. The lower limb bud started here just actually before the end of the fourth week. and progresses, and you begin to get a flattened area on that end also, which will eventually be the foot and toes, but it always lags a little bit behind the arms in terms of development. Okay, now here's our second ultrasound picture. It may be becoming a little more clear to you. Again, this one is taken in a vertical fashion so that the bladder is in front, the uterus is sitting like this, this is all uterus, and this is the amniotic cavity, like so. This little fuzz in the front is eventually going to be where the placenta is on the front wall of the uterus. But what I wanted to just point out to you is about at this stage, which is at 6 weeks after fertilization, you can see the embryo. Not much of the embryo, but you can tell it's there, and you can measure its crown rump length. And we can date a pregnancy at this stage by measuring the crown rump length of the baby at this early stage. You'd be hard on ultrasound to discern which end of this is the head end and which end is the tail end, but you can tell that there are two ends. Okay. Now, let's talk a little more about those branchial arches in the face, because this is happening about the same time. This is the side view and then the front view of the embryo as we move from the fourth through about the, let's see, so if I could focus that, I'll remind myself, 35, okay, fifth week. Remember the formation of those branchial arches. The first arch divides into two segments, which is called the maxillary and the mandibular arch. Okay, maxilla, you all may remember, is the upper jaw. The mandible is the lower jaw, and that's what they're going to form. In addition, the extreme front end of the embryo, right in front of the brain, curls down and starts to make the forehead in front of the face. Okay. Now, that ends up being sort of a three-way formation of the top half of the face. If you will, these lighter blue areas, which are the maxillary arches, come in from the side like this and around the corner to meet, get close to meeting in the middle. The mandibular arch met in the middle very early and is complete, changes its shape a bit, but it is complete in the midline from very early. But interestingly, this maxillary arch will never quite meet completely. We'll get to that in a second. Now, these large openings that are widely spaced are the openings for the nares, the nasal openings, and they form spontaneously in this most cranial portion of the embryo that is folding down across the front of the face. And as they form, they seem awfully widely spaced. But a lot of the things look distorted in the embryo. It's not because they move closer together. It's just that in this picture, they're probably, oh, somewhere in the neighborhood of a millimeter apart or so in real life. And just with differential growth, the cheekbones grow more than the distance between the nares. By the time the baby is born, it looks normal. Okay. So, now we're getting to look a little bit more like a face as these cheekbone parts, the maxillary parts, begin to fuse in the midline. You'll notice, though, there's a little gap here between the nares, that little divot right there, and that's the source, the potential source of cleft lip and cleft palate. That area right there and that area right there is where the maxillary arches quit growing. And the rest has to be filled in by this portion of the face that's growing down over the front, across, forming all the nose. And then there's this little tiny divot of tissue which fills in that space between the two maxillary arches, okay? If it doesn't make it all the way, you have a baby that has a cleft lip, and if it is carrying on to deeper inside the skull, the baby would also have a cleft palate. a fairly common abnormality. So we have then the formation of the maxilla from this maxillary process, the mandible from the mandibular process, maxillary process, and then this frontal process coming down to form the nose. And we still have a reminder of this, in that everybody has this little dent in the upper lip, which is called the philtrum. And that is the portion of your face that was constructed from this part that came across over the forehead. And the rest of the lips were formed from the maxillary processes coming in from the sides. Okay. So, here's just a quick summary of the third to the sixth week of pregnancy. We've gone from that primitive streak stage with the little formation of the somites. The heart begins to beat on day 22. The neural tube starts to fuse in the middle and fuses completely somewhere out in this range in 26, 27 days. The C-shaped embryo is formed completely after it folds. The face begins to form. The potential for cleft lip and cleft palate is high at 36 days after fertilization. That's just as that area is beginning to close up. And we're getting out here to 6 weeks. With the development of both limbs and the beginning of little dents in the distal part of the limbs showing where the fingers and toes are going to be. Okay. So here we have at 48 days, almost 7 weeks, the face is well on the way toward being formed, but you can still see the arches. Back here in the region of the fourth arch, actually the divot between the arches, there's a beginning formation of the external ear. And that's clear down here in the neck region of the embryo. But once again, with differential growth, it'll gradually move up the embryo until it becomes closer to normal. But you'll notice on newborn babies that their ears are placed lower on their head than ours are as adults. And that process continues throughout life so that babies have kind of low-set ears. By the time we're out a little over 7 weeks, there's definite finger formation and definite notches between the toes, and you're beginning to see a pretty human-looking form here. In addition, the somites, here's the last bit of them that are plugged into the tail, are gone completely out here by 51 days. There's no longer somites. And with that, the face is pretty well formed, an eyelid is formed, the external ear is beginning to form. We're getting pretty much a baby-looking thing. The heart prominence is still there. The heart's been working since the 26th day, and so you'd grant it to be a little disproportionately large at this stage. The other interesting thing is that the intestines have been growing. We had a single tube, from the front end to the tail end of the embryo at first. But as they grew faster than the length of the embryo, and so they started curling up in here, and there just isn't much room. So they pooch out into the umbilical cord, and everybody has had an umbilical hernia in their life. The intestines are all out here in this umbilical herniation. And this shows it again. You start out with a straight tube of intestine, but as the length gets longer, it runs out of room inside and starts to pooch out along the umbilical cord. And it starts out just as sort of a single fold and then becomes multiple folds until almost all the intestinal contents as such are outside the body. And then they start working their way back in again. And by about 12 weeks or so, have reattained an internal position. Just another look at what's the normal arrangement of the gastrointestinal tract. Now all that pooching out to the outside and coming back in can get turned around. And there are people who have their appendix on the left side because the whole thing gets turned around the wrong direction. That's called dextrorotation.
And in many times, it doesn't have any clinical significance until some organ goes wrong like that, and you don't think it's an appendicitis because it's on the wrong side. Okay, so here we are with the real picture of a six-week embryo with the notches between the fingers, a really kind of webbed-looking hand. Toes are not formed as yet, but we're beginning to get something that's pretty convincingly a face and that pigmented eye. Apologize for the crack in the slide. You can see this thickening in the umbilical cord up here, where the intestines are going to begin to come out this direction. This is a little early, and there's the heart again, very prominent. This area here is probably the liver, the other big prominence there. The liver and the gallbladder, the pancreas, and all the other glands that empty into the gastrointestinal tract form just as outbuds of the gastrointestinal tract. Okay. So here we go, 52 to 56 days, here we are at 8 weeks. The umbilical herniation is there by 8 weeks, but the intestinal tract is forming. The heart is formed, it's got rid of all those extra aortas. We have toes, we have fingers, we have a distance from seat to the top of the head of about almost an inch, not quite. But here we are at 8 weeks. This is the end of the embryo stage. The entire embryo has developed all of its organ systems that it will ever need. They have to be refined a little bit. They have to be enlarged a lot, but they're all present at this stage. Fingers and toes. The major abnormalities, therefore, the ones that result in loss of limbs, too many fingers or too few fingers, cleft lip, cleft palate, neural tube problems, heart defects, intestinal problems have all been determined by this time. So the rest of the pregnancy, major abnormalities are much less likely. And here we have the real picture of a baby at that stage. You can see the blood vessels in the umbilical cord traversing out onto the early placenta. You can see the pigmented eye, the ear forming there, the baby's hands in front of its face and mouth, so we can't see, but it has formed its face and mouth by this stage. The toes are separated, although the external genitalia, this looks a lot like a boy, it's probably still would be indeterminate if you looked at the baby if it were miscarried at this stage. But still, the external genitalia and all the reproductive organs have started on their way toward development, and whether or not you're going to have a major abnormality has already been determined. Okay, so the 7th through the 10th week, we've gone from, 10th week we're going to be a little bit into tomorrow, but let's go through the 7th and 8th week here. With the development of the face, and the ear's a little low set, but it's there, crown rump length, about an inch, a little over an inch they say here, although different sources, there's a little bit of variation, but not much in babies at this stage. And so by the end, they say in this particular slide, a little over an inch, but very close to an inch from the crown rump length. And we have the closure of the embryonic period and the beginning of what we call the fetal period as the baby develops all these things. Now this is the first look at a slide that we're going to look at a lot. And that's that, as you can see, all these red bars represent when major abnormalities, major morphological, that means missing or present or malformed, major abnormalities are formed at the time that these red bars exist. And as you can see, the vast majority of them are over by 8 weeks. with the possible external genitalia can be affected later. But for the most part, most of the major abnormalities are already completed. Nevertheless, bear in mind that this one, the central nervous system, the brain, can be affected throughout pregnancy, and as a matter of fact, can be affected after delivery in terms of abnormal development, learning disabilities, and things like that. Okay, we'll be coming back to that slide in the future. We'll be talking a lot more about abnormalities in the future as we get a little closer toward the baby's birth. Can I have the light? Well, so for tonight, I didn't go into every organ system, of course. The kidneys have been forming over the same period of time. The lungs, all the internal organs, of course, have gotten a run on being developed during the first 8 weeks. But I figured in the interest of time and in the interest of avoiding boredom, we wouldn't go into every single organ system. But the important things to remember, I think, are that the embryonic period is over at the end of 8 weeks of development, and that is defined as that portion of the pregnancy during which all of the vital organs are formed. And from here on out, we've got growth, we've got differentiation, we've got sophistication of the different cells and the different organs. We have some rearrangement of where they are, like the intestinal tract comes back from being out in the umbilical cord, hopefully. It may not always. That's another abnormality we could talk about. But the big things that go wrong, such as mothers contracting the three-day measles, rubella, taking medications that are going to cause major abnormalities, x-rays that are going to cause major abnormalities, are all going to have happened by this stage. And this is very early in pregnancy. So something I mentioned last night again are people who say they're going to change their habits or give up some particular vice that they know might be harmful in a pregnancy when they find out they're pregnant. Well, by the time they find out they're pregnant, you are all but about 2 weeks done in forming the baby in there in terms of all of its organ systems. So if a pregnancy is planned, that's the time to get rid of your vices, not after you know you're pregnant. Okay, let me just open it up to questions and we can, if there are any. Yeah, aspirin is definitely convicted of causing cleft lip and cleft palate, and that's of course one of those common medications, and I don't think the knowledge probably hasn't been spread very well, perhaps by the power of the Bayer company, I don't know, but actually acetaminophen, Tylenol, Dayquil, and those things have not been shown to cause any abnormalities. Believe me, if I had my druthers, no patient of mine would take anything in the first 12 weeks of the pregnancy, adding a couple weeks there for safety's sake, in case we might be wrong on dates. But if absolutely necessary, it is true that the acetaminophen products seem to have a better safety record in pregnancy. Well, in a lot of cases, the question was about how the baby initially develops a flat plate for a hand, and then fingers are formed within that plate, leaving webs between the fingers, and then eventually those webs go away. Again, primarily it's probably because of differential growth. The hand is so tiny at this stage, by the time the baby's hand becomes the size, this web shouldn't grow while the main part of the hand and the fingers does, and it sort of just swallows up those webs, okay? If the webs continue to grow for some reason, then you can have babies that have partial webbing, and that's not an uncommon abnormality, especially between the ring finger and the little finger. You see it fairly commonly, and luckily it's usually not too disabling and can be corrected surgically quite satisfactorily. what particular factor causes it. You know, if we don't know of any given medication that will cause it or genetic cause, I'm afraid we're ignorant of what does it. Yes. Okay, the question was about the fontanelles. The development of the skull comes from a number of bones, from two sets of bones here, and two here, and one back here. And as a result, you have a little soft spot right there when you're born, and you have a soft spot right here where these four bones are coming together. And this is the large soft spot, and everybody is aware of that. Those are called fontanelles. And the question was, what about premature closure of those? Well, like, unfortunately, lots of things in medicine, we don't know what causes them to prematurely close. For one good reason, because we don't know why they don't close normally, okay? We don't know what it is that keeps it separated. People would say the growth of the brain is so fast that it exceeds the rate of growth of the skull bones, and therefore they don't meet and fuse. But we know that's not really true, because if the skull bones do fuse prematurely, it can cause pressure on the brain and resultant mental retardation, unless it's divided surgically, and then the babies develop normally. So that it probably has to do with a number of factors. One could hypothesize vitamin D toxicity or some other stimulant to bone growth, or for some reason less than normal intracerebral pressure related to the fluid on the brain or something like that being less than normal, so that there isn't pressure pushing those bones out at the same time they're trying to grow together. But which one of those things it is, I'm afraid we don't know. But it is something to keep an eye on, because it is another surgically correctable problem. Well, my personal leaning, and this is a very personal thing, is that the baby does not draw too much in terms of demand nutritionally on you until it's attained some size, okay? You can imagine that this little tiny item here, despite the fact that it's doing a lot, it's all of an inch tall, and that baby doesn't need very many calories or minerals or vitamins or anything else. So I say, why take them at this stage? Now, I know that by the time the baby starts getting to be this size, it's making blood like crazy, and it uses iron like it's making nails in there. And then it's important. There has been an isolated report or two, as there has been with most medications, that ferrous sulfate, the most common form of iron supplements, possibly could cause some abnormalities. So I do give iron and vitamin supplements to my patients, particularly iron, sometimes vitamins, but almost always iron, but not until after this first 12 weeks of organ formation. I'm not terribly worried about that, but I'm real conservative. Okay. Other questions? Boy, we're going to be done. Yeah. Part of the object of this whole course, I hope, is to get you people to say, man, it's amazing it all works out right. I mean, that is the thing that struck me when I took embryology, was that what a fabulous design God must have, what an incredible blueprint. How many of us could build a house and not have the door off 6 inches or something like that, let alone all the complicated things that are going on here? And the formation of the face is a good example. All these different parts have to come together just right to make a perfect face. And the fact that it goes a little bit wrong every once in a while, I think, is understandable. And what happens there is, you know, just hypothesis, one side or the other was growing a little bit farther forward than the other, And when it met in the middle, it had to go somewhere. So it went out in a little tag. And, if you will, sort of a dog ear along the seam, okay? And those... Yeah, and I'm sure that's exactly where it came from. Exactly where it came from, and now you know when it happened. But obviously that's not exactly a bad problem. But like I said, one of the things I want you people to do is just sit back here and say, you know, the glory of God is exceedingly obvious in the development of a new human being, and God's creation was not done in Genesis. Today it's happening in your local hospital, in a few homes around. It's happening millions of times around the world, even today. And so that God's creation goes on, and the wonder of it at least intrigues me considerably.